and unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Hello, good morning. Last week, I told stories about bodhisattvas and the birth of the Mahayana great vehicle school. Bodhisattvas mean emptiness and compassion. And the great vehicle, maybe the great vehicle, is Prajnaparamita, the perfection of wisdom, which is the training of bodhisattvas. So now I want to talk about Dogen's Zen. Dogen was born in 1200. It was a time of some turmoil in Japan. And right around the same time as he started teaching, there were two other major teachers, Shinran and Nichiren. Shinran and Nichiren both felt that it being the time of the decadent Dharma, there wasn't much point in doing formal practice. The Buddha had said, so we hear, who knows, that the Dharma would really survive well for 500 years after he died. And then the next 500 years would be sort of a little fuzzy. And then after that would be the time of the decay of the Dharma. It would be just not much. Or maybe people would just be confused. So Nichiren and Shinran both believed that they were in the time of the decayed Dharma. And so they each preached a kind of faith-based Dharma that relied on this, it's a recitation, and Shinran proposed that people call upon Amitabha or Amida Buddha, the Buddha of the pure land. And that was the practice. Because it's interesting if you think about it, if that's to be useful, you have to completely mean it. And we talk about that in Zen, you know, that when you get to the level of vow, when you completely mean it in your bones, then something shifts. At any rate, that's what Shinran taught, and that became what's called the Pure Land or Jodo Shinshu school of Buddhism in Japan, which is a major one, the major one. And Nichiren taught chanting the title of the Lotus Sutra, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, calling on the Lotus Sutra, which is also about teaching bodhisattvas, by the way. But it was just the I'd say meditative reciting of it. Dogen, at about the same time, Dogen felt that practice is practice. And as soon as you sit down and get quiet and pay attention, Buddha's right there. So you don't have to worry about the time of the decadent Dharma. Just do Dharma practice, and there's nothing decadent about it. So he taught Zazen. Chant. Usually at one day sittings, longer sittings, we do a longer service and we chant the Fukan Zazengi, the recommendation for Zazen. One of the first things that he wrote when he got back from China. And one of the reasons he went to China was because he felt that practice in Japan had gotten rather decadent. I mean, it had gotten quite decadent. Sure, not everybody, but an awful lot of them. At any rate, he went to China and he met Ru Jing. And Ru Jing taught Zazen. I think there's something in that movie, Zen. I think Ru Jing says something about, you know, sit until your ass is bloody. Who said it a little more politely, but not much. So that was Dogen's foundation, and that's what he taught. He wrote a lot, but it was all about Zazen. Dogen's fundamental teaching is that practice is enlightenment. Practice is enlightenment. Don't write it down. Don't write it down. Take it in to your heart. Practice is enlightenment. And now you can spend the rest of your life divining, delving into, what does that mean? Illuminating it. We say you should practice with that. Or I'll practice with it. Years ago, a friend whom I dearly love, a man named Mio Leahy, Dennis Leahy, a fine Irish man whose brother is a Catholic priest. And Mio is now the abbot of the Hartford Street Zen Center. But at any rate, a long time ago, Mio and I were often on, we were both practicing at City Center, and we were on various, you know, committees and meetings and stuff. And we just kept sort of butting heads, and it wasn't exactly contentious, but we just seemed to trigger each other. And I went to him and I said, we really need to talk, I think, because we just seem to trigger each other. And he said, I don't know about talking about it. Let's practice with it. Meaning, you go home and look at yourself, and I'll go home and look at myself. I mean, that's a simplistic way of saying it. But he meant each of us to do it on our own, not to talk about it. I think talking about such things was not an easy thing for him. But at any rate, that's what was on offer. So I did. I really worked on it. It's akin to, sometimes I use the word doing your homework. But practicing with it maybe is deeper. And in that kind of context, it means paying extra attention to it, putting your intention on really paying attention, noticing when you get triggered, and when you get triggered, checking in right away. What's going on with me? Giving it breath, letting it go, letting the triggered part go. Asking yourself, what do I really feel here? What do I really think? What is the appropriate response from me right now in this meeting? If I don't agree with something Myo said, why do I hate him right this second? What is that? What is it about me that's implicated here? What's going on? And then, you know, other times, sitting zazen, taking it on as sort of a koan, I guess. I don't guess, taking it on as a koan, asking myself, what is it about me, about us, about him that's triggering for me? Am I jealous of him in some way? Does he remind me of my sister? Which he doesn't, by the way, but you know, just those kinds of questions. What is going on here that I get triggered by him? And not so much sitting around thinking about it, but just keeping the question alive so that some responses can arise, whether I like them or not. No. Didn't have to do with figuring out how Myo was wrong. Anyway, it worked. I started to say it did work, but I don't know what he went through about it, but he stopped being so triggered by me also. And we have a deep affection for each other now, and much easier and more fun. So that's just an example of practicing with something. Digging into it, really turning your attention towards it. We talk about practicing zazen. And partly that's just doing it, repetitive, like the scales, just doing it and letting go and letting go and letting go of discursive thought, practicing letting go of discursive thought, practicing sitting up straight. But there's a deeper meaning to it. When Dogen says practice is enlightenment, what does he mean? Letting go? Does he mean seeing the emptiness of your own emotions and ideas? Does he mean allowing, sort of intentionally allowing the bonds of self-clinging to loosen? By intentionally noticing the harm caused by self-clinging, noticing the joy of letting go, knowing about the own being of all dharmas, or the lack thereof, and the lack thereof. Prajnaparamita. Stays close to the own being of all dharmas. She does not stray away from it. She doesn't pretend that there's no clinging. She does not pretend that there's no attachment. She knows the harm caused by clinging and attachment. Avalokiteshvara, when practicing deeply the Prajnaparamita, perceived that all five skandhas in their own being are empty, and thus removed all suffering, was free from all suffering. Depends on the translation. Thus relieved all suffering. He was practicing deeply, coursing along. I like that word, coursing. I was sort of in my mind's eye. There's a river, and you just flow with it. Not even as a body. Just think of it as maybe your splotch of blue paint flowing along, and next to a red one. And after a while, maybe there's just purple. That sense of just the flowing. So what's practice? Practice is jumping in. Jump. Practice is enlightenment. Enlightenment, being enlightened, seeing the light, being the light, knowing the light, illuminating. Practice is being open to practice, being willing to practice. These are the words, willingness, allowing. Being. They're all mistakes, but that's the closest we can get, or I can get right this minute. I know this in my bones. I'm not sure exactly. You know, it comes from practice, I suppose. And I remember Reb did an experiment one time with Doksan during a sesshin at Tassajara when he was leading the practice period. And he did it, I think, a little more like a Rinzai practice of you walk in and sit down, and he would ask you a very brief question, and you were supposed to just answer it spontaneously, sort of like a mini Shuso ceremony or something. And he said to me, "What is enlightenment?" And I said, "Practice." And it just felt like it got pulled out of my gut. It's hard for me. I don't usually talk about these kinds of things. So that's the best I can do. I'm not going to try to imitate how it came out, but it just got pulled out of me. And that just happened. But then a little later, I was pleased that that's what got pulled out of me. I didn't think about it. I think we can know this more and more as we practice, maybe in a more conventional sense, as we practice Zazen and we practice Dokusan and we practice service. And we see what happens when we harmonize in service, when we let go of our individuality in service, and it becomes, you will remember this, we will be back here someday, that all these voices harmonize together. And it's as if there's one brain, which is often the Kokyo, but sometimes the Doan, and sometimes the officiant, the Doshi. There's one brain and a bunch of bodies. That happens. And when that happens, doesn't always happen, but usually it happens in service. And that's one of the ways you know how connected we are, embodying it. That's a practice. And it embodies the connection of emptiness. This is the kind of enlightenment that Suzuki Roshi talked about when he said, when you go, it's like going out for a walk in the fog, and after a while you notice your clothes are wet. I'm not talking about the kind that involves bells and whistles and flashes of light, though those are useful too. I think I don't know. I have had various experiences, but I have not had thunder and lightning. So I don't know about that. Whatever those experiences are, they're useful to encourage us and to remind us that it really is now. And this really is it. And there really are no boundaries. But it's practice that matters. It's that pulling back and noticing and saying, asking yourself, what is this? What's going on here? And maybe sometimes it depends on what it is, but I've talked about being angry and knowing that my response is way out of proportion to whatever triggered it. And kind of letting the internal tape of hurt and anger, defensiveness and whatever run, you know, and how could you do this to me? And pretty soon it's, how could you do this to me? Me, how could you do this to me? You know, and then I start laughing. That's practicing with it, not denying it. And, you know, it may be that I did get hurt and I do feel resentful and I do need to talk to somebody about it, but I don't need to impose the me on the other person. And I need to experience it though. I need to experience that little childish, that child's hurt, fear, and whatever else. I can't skip over that. I have to practice with it. Gets easier, doesn't have to last so long, but it's not an optional step. Practice, that willingness to practice, that allowing practice, that vow of practice, which is, I'm debating various words, fundamentally is zazen, grows out of zazen. It's not a head event, at any rate. So I bring this up because I think it is fundamental for us to understand what Dogen meant. Or to have a sense of it. I mean, we don't know exactly what he meant. And you really do have to define it for yourselves. And it's one of those things that every time you talk about it, you probably change your definition a little bit. But we need to really deeply understand the depth of his commitment, the depth of what he's talking about. And he is talking about it. I know that he lived from 1200 to 1253, and he's talking to us right now. He's on the wall over there, and he is right here because we bring him here. I bring him here. When we practice this way, it's not decadent dharma. Buddha's right here. He's over there too. So Suzuki Roshi, but you can't see his picture. The way this laptop is set up right this second. You can see Bodhidharma though over my shoulder. Bodhidharma said, according to Ruijing, Bodhidharma brought practice to China. The Buddhism had been more, scholarly before that, maybe more intellectual. And Bodhidharma said,
judging from people's faces, Mary froze for all of us. Okay, I'll ping her. Okay, let's see if she comes back in a moment. First there's disappearing, then there's appearing.
Looks like you got made the host of the meeting, Steve.
Okay. She probably did that on, I don't know if Zoom did that or she did that.
Yeah.
Anyway, hopefully he'll be back. So I just told Mary that just asked her if she wants us to log out and in, and said that you all can hear me. So we'll see what she says. Is that a sweater with a zipper, Kelly? I used to have one like that.
No zipper.
Okay, then it's not the same. Okay, she said beyond froze, trying to come back, I'll need to reboot. Did everyone freeze or just me? I said just you.
Mm-hmm.
And a message is about to come through. I can see the little dot dot dot. Hopefully we'll get this fixed before you have to leave, Dana. Okay, she says I'll log out. She says she will log out and started to say she sees all of us practicing. Please discuss. Actually, something did come to mind as Mary was talking, so I guess I'll start. I thought of this ancient Chinese poem by the great haiku poet Basho. It's, if you've ever heard of him, you know this poem. The ancient well. Frog jumps in. Kaplunk. Anyway, that to me is like the wordless part of practice, entering the stream.
Can't hear you, Mary.
We see you now.
Yeah, you're moving.
You're not frozen. Speak again.
Yeah.
Connecting to audio, it says. Now you look like you're muted.
Okay, now can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Just as I was getting to this great
I know.
I could sense a crescendo coming.
Yeah.
you so had a this is it look on your face. This is the point look.
I know. I start getting this message. Oh, it's still recording. That's good, I guess. Yeah. Anyhow. I get this message that says this is a security problem with Zoom. And it's not trustworthy. And then I say trust. I click on trust anyway, and it's like McAfee will not, or somebody won't accept that. Anyhow, never mind. Here we are. Did you start discussing what I suggested, or did you? How far did you get? Okay. So now, what did you say?
I said that what you heard, were talking about reminded me of the Basho poem that everyone knows about the frog, and I recited it, that kerplunk is like our practice when we enter the stream, except that it was a well in the poem, but same diff.
Yeah.
It's wordless. And then you came back.
Yeah. Anybody else? Zach? I mean, Kelly? Kelly.
Yeah. There's so few of us, I could have just started talking. I was thinking we've been reading a whole bunch of Ursula K. Le Guin around here because we all like her. And I read this great quote about a week ago that I was reminded of, where she said in a book, she said, you know, the ends justify the means until we start to realize that there are no ends. It's all means. And we, you know, in the context of the book, it meant a couple of things. And one was just the sort of a moral question. But listening to you today, I'm like, it also kind of describes the idea as practice being the point. Like they're not being a goal past that. That this is it. All you have is means. Just do that.
Yep. Right. No, sit down, pay attention, and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yes, Zach.
Well, the word that came to my mind about practice is noticing or paying attention. And, you know, sometimes it's sort of something nice, like noticing the breeze that I probably wouldn't have noticed before I started practicing. But it's also like noticing how fast I'm eating and why am I doing that? And there's a reason I'm eating so fast. I'm a fast eater. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to slow down, so I'm noticing it more now. Or thinking about, you know, getting frustrated or angry, like why is this happening? It's a small thing that's setting me off. So just sort of paying attention and being with it is kind of what I think of. Maybe it's kind of opening stages of practice and enlightenment and everything. But for me, a big step is noticing things.
Yeah. Well, Dana.
Oh, huh. Well, a couple things. I had an argument with a friend of mine that I've been friends with for over 35 years. And we just took a break, needed to take a break. And a lot of it was my, I'm going to say fault, but my story I was clinging to about my anger towards her daughter. And I was expecting an apology for what she said. I really felt I needed to have this apology from her. And I kept bringing it up to my friend as if she could make that happen for a couple of years. Like, I really can be very stubborn. And eventually it just came to a head, and I can't lie to her, and I really told her all this ugly stuff, like really the mud under the river of this horrific feeling I had that was also really true. So we had to take a break on it, and we were just trying to trust, I was trying to trust our friendship to survive, and also accepting that it could be ended. And it was a grief that was even almost worse because she was still alive. And then finally I wrote about it many, many times, all the letters I wrote that I never sent to practice with my feeling. And eventually I just picked up the phone and told her I was sorry, like the action of it. And she was kind of waiting for this apology. And she just said, I love you. And so it's like practice in action.
Yeah. It isn't like practice, it is practice.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the clock, but I didn't put it over there, so it's not there. So it doesn't work to look at the clock, but oops, I'm looking at my watch and we're already a little bit over.
It's 5 till 11.
Right, I know. I'm looking at the schedule. So let's do 10 minutes of, let's do Kinhin until 11:10. Back.
Okay.
And then just go back to the regular schedule.
Okay. Yes. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are